CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Da-na-na-na. Yes, we're live. It's Tuesday morning. It is just after 6 o'clock, and we have got Leban. She's still alive. She's still with us. She's still just a singular unit. There's still no baby. We've been preparing for the last how many weeks now? We actually had a meeting about this last week, Simpiwe and Dari and I. We're like, ooh, I wonder when it's going to happen. When Lebang's going to phone us at like 7 o'clock at night or at 5 in the morning and suddenly say, ooh, listen, there's some exciting shit going down. So she's very much still with us. And this morning, we are joined by Mash from our studios in Johannesburg. Mash has been interning with us for a whole long time, and we thought it was about time now to introduce you to him. How are you doing, Mash? Nice to see you, dude.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. All right, so let's spend a little bit of time getting to know you, because people don't know you on the show, and they may have encountered you if they've actually been to the office, but that's like 5% of the people. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? What have you been up to, and what's been happening to you at Cliff Central in the last couple of weeks?
Well, a bit about myself.
Well,
first of all, I do quite a lot. There's pretty much nothing that I don't do.
All right.
From marketing stuff, from IT stuff, from I'm basically just everything to everyone. That's basically what I am in layman's terms.
He's a fixer.
Yeah.
I'm a fixer.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I do. And yeah, Cliff Central, you know, I've just been doing quite a lot as well. I'm sure people have seen me on the TikToks as well, just doing some dances, just having some fun there.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's pretty much me there.
All right. Well, I mean, listen, that's where we've, if anyone has seen you, it would have been on TikTok. Are you the one who's behind all these dances, or is it Simpiwe? I mean, tell the truth.
It is Aaron, actually, surprisingly.
Yeah, it's Aaron.
Yeah.
Aaron,
he's the one who loves
dancing. He's always in the front.
Right.
He's always in the front. And I mean, if you just check his TikToks, he's just dancing all the time. He's dancing the bathrooms, dancing everywhere.
That's true. And he puts on a lot of the stuff that, especially over weekends, we see some stuff happening there. And it's very much his brainchild. Huh?
It is.
Yeah.
It definitely is. My content is more on the... my content is a bit complicated because I am more of a bit of everything kind of dude. So my content is more satirical. It's more laid back. It's more, I'd say, a bit of research goes into it. I mean, if you go on my TikTok, you'll see that I actually post a lot of fun, laid back stuff. I post
Where are you from, though? Tell us like a little bit about your background. Like, where did you grow up, and what's the story?
Like, I've grew up in Free State in Kwakwa.
No one will hold that against you. We've had Kwakwa people on here before. So that's an amazing place. By the way, if you've never been to Kwakwa, it is huge. It is
a huge place.
It is really, really enormous. And you only know that once you've actually driven through it or in it. Because
that is true.
It's enormous, right?
Yes, and then when you meet few people from Kwakwa, it's always crazy in Johannesburg because I always run into people from there. The crazy thing is whenever I speak, people know immediately I'm from there. There was one time I was at the money market, I was trying to withdraw some money. I have to give this lady a code.
Right.
I'm telling her the code 573. She's like, you're from Kwakwa, ne? Only Kwakwa people say three like that.
Is that how you can tell?
That is how you can tell. That three, the way we say the letter R, as Sotho people from Kwakwa specifically,
right,
can immediately tell where we're from. But then after Kwakwa, I grew up, I came here to the big city, and I moved to this other place. My first apartment in the big city was very odd, to say the least, because it was a very small apartment. It was a bachelor, and the walls were pretty much made of cardboard.
Yeah.
And it was actually drywalling, but I call it cardboard because there's no difference there.
which means you can hear everything that's going on in the room next door. Everything.
Yeah. Whether you want to or not, you can hear pretty much everything.
And there's no such thing as privacy in a place like that.
There is no such thing. I mean, I knew I had to move when I sneezed and I heard bless you from next door. That's when I knew it's time to go.
If that ain't a sign, I don't know what is.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I heard many other things, but that's just PTSD. I don't want to relive that.
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
So, Carl says, I was told that Mash grew up on a farm in Ireland and was beaten a lot. Tatlejo says, quack, quack. Oh, hey, I am from there. That's home. Ha, ha, ha. Okay.
Yeah, Kwakwa is lots of fun, but it's also really cold. So that's why I ask people from Kwakwa, we never get cold. Generally.
No, you guys, because it's that Free State cold that we've spoken about sometimes on the show, and there's nothing in the whole world like a Free State cold. When it's cold there, it's fucking in your bones cold. I just got to say this too. Today is the 21st, so it's winter solstice, which means it's supposedly the shortest day of the year, longest night of the year. Although, if you tell me, I always feel like I'm not getting enough sleep, even in the longest night of the year. Right, Lebang?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I was like, winter solstice? Really? Yeah. No.
Try could that have fooled again.
Me. Yeah. It just feels this like, did feel, yeah, another... this night did feel quite long because I actually set like six alarms. Mm. And each one rang and rang and rang. And I was like, it's still not even 5 yet. It just felt like it wasn't ending. The night just didn't want to end.
Well, I mean, it's finally, if once we're through this, then supposedly, you know, that it starts getting warmer again. Although I don't know, because when you talk to me about July and August, those are the worst ones for me. The rest I can handle. June is never as bad as July. Anyway, we're not going to get into a discussion of the weather, even though that is what a lot of people are talking about at the moment. The interesting thing about this, and whether or not you are a big fan of this information, it turns out that the shortest the night, the June solstice, the longest night, rather, shortest day. Also, these are some interesting some interesting little bits and pieces. So on the June solstice, the sun is directly on the Tropic of Cancer, which is 23.5 degrees north latitude at noon. At the equator, the day is always 12 hours long. At the equator, the sun rises at 6 and sets at 6, no matter what. That's why it's good to be at the equator. You get the best of both worlds. Then in the Antarctic, this is scary. There's the Antarctic Circle, right? The sun only makes a brief appearance at noon, peaking at the horizon and then instantaneously disappearing. All areas south of the Antarctic Circle are dark on the June solstice. They don't even get any sun.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And at the South Pole... At the South Pole, it has been dark for 3 months already by June 21st.
Oh, let it go. 3 months of no sunshine, I imagine? Am moving.
Can you imagine?
There's nothing for you there.
Yeah, so that was sent to me by someone called Bianca who listens to us, and she thought that was useful information for us to have this morning. Ugly. For a country whose weather isn't even mild, it's lemon and herb. We spend a lot of time complaining. That's true, but... as we've also discussed before, we're not equipped for a very cold winter in South Africa. We don't. I mean, maybe you guys are in Kwakwa, but like here in Johannesburg, we're not. I think people are used to summer, and we prepare for summer, and most of us spend our time outside. We don't spend our time inside, so we don't have like insulation and double glazing and, you know, all the stuff that they have in very cold countries. So I think that's... I think that's part of the reason that we do that. All right. Mm. So apparently it is going to snow this weekend, according to Goldashik. Yes. Are you ready for that?
I also heard that. It's yeah, about the time. Security guard at my son's school, literally every morning, like this week, yesterday, I drove my kids to school. He's like, prepare yourself. Thursday, it's going to be snowing. I was like, cool story, bro. And I'm like, oh, crap. It's gonna snow this weekend.
Can you imagine?
You know, I need to really prep for that.
Oh my god,
it could be really fun.
It could be really
fun. But like, you know how like snow, when you say snow to kids, they think, oh, America, Santa Claus, like this knee deep of snow that they're gonna sit in. And we never really get that. We just get like little shrivels of it every other year if it's cold enough, you know. So I don't even want to bring it up with any of my kids. Like,
no.
They shouldn't know that there's a possibility because their expectations versus what's going to happen.
That's exactly right. Because when we were kids and we were at school, we used to have to, we wished and we hoped and we prayed that it would snow because we thought, oh, it'll be so exciting. We can build snowmen and it'll be like in the movies. And then there was one occasion where there was a little bit of, I suppose it was sleet. It wasn't even snow. And it was so depressing because it was like this just very, very cold, icy shit on the ground. It wasn't like little snowflakes falling or any of that romantic shit that they show you, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty played out. I think like they just make it look so sexy and so fancy. I mean, when you see it, you're like, oh, cool. Yeah.
So in Kotwa, it's just another Tuesday. So snow is very common.
All right, so here he is. That's your full name is Mashiane Sefut, right?
Yes, that's right. My full name.
There we go. Very good.
Right, somebody was asking for your pronouns in the comments.
Oh, someone wants.
It's fair that we.
Yeah, we're a very progressive show. Yeah, what are your pronouns so that we can get this right?
We are.
My pronouns are him, he's, and he.
All right, there we go.
Sure.
Because you got to say that these days, right? Otherwise, you are left behind.
You have to be politically correct. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Very important.
I'm in crazy times.
I did a funny thing over the weekend. It was Father's Day on Sunday. So my sister and I were with my dad, and we taught him about Apple Music, which he never knew about that before. He had this crappy old iPod, which I must have given him, I don't know, 15 years ago. Remember when iPods were a thing? It was one of those little remember those little square ones? Tiny little ones
with
the wheel, the shuttle, that's what it's called. So he had one of these, and somehow this thing was still working. And it had like 120 of these terrible songs that he likes on there. And that was what he was coping with for, I don't know, 15 years? Must have been. Maybe 12, but certainly not less than that. And my sister said, look, it's time we get you into the, you know, into the future, into the year 2022 at least. So we're going to help you with this. So my dad's like, yeah, cool. But, you know, as long as it's not too complicated. And, of course, it's always too complicated because you got to figure this stuff out. And so we eventually got it right, and we had to create a whole thing for him. So you have to create the Apple account. Then you tell him that you're going to charge him money every month, and he's not happy with that, right? Not happy at all. So he's like, what do you mean it's going to cost me money? What is this? So we're like, no, but it's very little. I said to him, think about how much music there is. There's all the music you've ever wanted in the whole world on this one device. It's going to be amazing. And he goes, well, I suppose. I'm like, 60 rand a month. It's a lot of money, but it's not that much money. Come on, let's do it. So he's like, all right, fine. So we set this thing up. He spent about 3 hours on Sunday just finding songs. And it's amazing. Like even my dad, who's like, in his 60s, approaching his 70s, he's like, I can figure this out. It was amazing. You leave him alone on Apple Music, and he's adding songs, and he's listening to old music, and he's finding stuff he cares about. It was actually quite cool to see, because we often think, you know, our parents are stupid and they won't figure this stuff out. But it was cool that he not only figured it out, but now he's all over it. He's like, this is great. I love Apple Music. Now I'm going to be downloading music for the rest of the year. And he's finding all the songs he likes, and then I said to him, this thing's going to suggest music to you that you might not have heard for a long time. He's like, yes, okay, cool. But he's open-minded about it, so I suppose that's why it works. If you go in with the attitude that this thing's going to be a disaster, then it will, right?
It will be. Hmm. That's nice of you.
Yeah. In most cases, especially with the older generation, I've noticed, it's just about them actually trying something out. You have to force it down their throat.
You have to.
And if you tell them about it, they're never going to be sold on it. They're never, ever going
to
be sold.
I think that's right. You know, how's that different to us, for example? I mean, when we have to learn about something new, it's not always easy. It's not always something that you can do well. Something you have to figure out. It takes time sometimes. And anyway, for my dad, that was quite fun. And I just think we mustn't give up on people just because it's not immediately obvious to them how to use these things. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But they must also show efforts, man. Like, it's exhausting when, like, they come to you for the same thing every week. Please, can you restart my phone? Please, can you da-da-da-da-da? And I'm like, I showed you this last week. I can show you three more times, but after that, you are literally on your own. Like, there's a bit of like you have to want to do this. I can't keep, you know, like spoon feeding you how to press the on and off button. The fact that your dad is down with Apple Music is really dope. I think I've drawn the line with my mother when it comes to phones. Like, YouTube is the hill that she's willing to die on. There's nothing else. There's like her emails, they just come in. She does nothing. She doesn't open anything. I think she recently learned how to do WhatsApp stories. So now we're being bombarded, which is cute, but that's it. Nothing else. And that's fine.
What is your mom bombarding you guys with on WhatsApp stories?
Dude, you can guess. Those good morning graphics,
those terrible fonts,
and the flowers in the back, and it's like 1 minute voice notes of like church sermons or whatever, which is fine. Like it's, you know, these videos of little Asian girls holding their hands in prayer. And look, I don't know where she gets the stuff.
Yeah, that's like it's the typical mom.
Yeah, I mean, all moms do a couple of things, right? Like they send those gifts that they find, because they find those pretty quickly with like the smiley faces or the sunrise or any of those things. They like that stuff. All moms like that stuff. They also will randomly send you a picture of something which is really out of focus and kind of, because the photography thing, only for a few moms is that like an obvious thing that they can do with ease, you know? So there are a couple of things you just have to get used to, but it was cool to see that people can learn this technology. You know, you see it with kids. I mean, Lebang, you must have seen it with yours. No matter how old they are, you give them one of these devices and very quickly they figure it all out.
No, 100%.
So it's true for old people as well.
They get better at it than you. Like literally, my 2-year-old is a genius. She fixes my phone for me. And I don't know how, I don't know where, but that's just because they spend so much time on these devices. They learn them.
Yeah, my mom, one thing she says a lot of is fake news, so I had to block her. But
like what kind of fake news? Does she like tell you about violence that's going to break out somewhere and you must be careful? Or...
It's always like these apocalyptic things that she shares a lot of.
Right.
That next week the country's going to burn. Oh, you must buy lots of toilet paper. She shares that kind of stuff a lot and it gets so tiring. So I actually had to block her. I unblock her perhaps on one weekend sometimes or when she calls. But then she never uses WhatsApp anyway. So she just calls me if she needs me.
Oh, no. Very convenient. No, my mom's like big on WhatsApp now, so that's her thing now, and she's got all her friends on WhatsApp as well, and she changes her profile picture and all of that stuff. She knows it. Ooh. She knows that, but
she's a WhatsApp fluencer.
But thank goodness. I mean, the one thing that they don't do is social media, so I'm very relieved that my parents aren't on social media.
You'd be surprised though, because lots of moms are on TikTok. TikTok is full of moms.
No.
All the moms are there, and they're the ones trending more than everyone else.
They're
there. I follow like 30 moms.
And they're literally like, they're doing the most. They're just doing God's work. They're just in there shouting at their kids. They're just in there complaining about their kids. They're just being typical moms. And what do we love? We love relatable content. So we sit there and we eat it up because it's like, oh yeah, I totally got channel like that growing up. Mothers are killing it on TikTok.
Good. Let them do it. I'm all for it. If there's a mom somewhere who's figuring this stuff out and creating great content, go for it. I mean, who knows? We may discover the next big thing, right? I mean, it might not be the people you think it is. It might be moms. That wouldn't be the weirdest thing that's ever happened, would it?
It wouldn't at all.
So here, this is interesting. A couple of points here. First of all, I told my dad, this is Carl, he says that the USBs with the Apple logo on them is Apple Music. He was excited to get away from CDs. You are very cruel. Then, hey guys, don't forget one thing. Us oldies were the ones that actually invented and perfected this tech you're using today. Be thankful, says Angus. That's a good point. I mean, we think our parents are dumb and they don't understand this stuff, but it was their generation who did figure it out. Michael says, what's worse is old ones that think they know everything and have no idea. My mom has a laptop and a cell phone. They change at least twice a year, and viruses and apps are on overload. Well, yeah, listen, not everybody's good at this, like we said. Sanele says, Rebel, it's enough here. It doesn't end with the facing. Glass is also important. I have nothing but glass doors. Okay, that's to do with the weather. Sanele's talking about the weather there. Most of those moms on TikTok are young 20s, single mamas, living with their folks. Is that true?
No.
Nope. These not are those. Literally like 40, 45, maybe even 55, 60. These are our mothers. They are investing in TikTok. Mama. It's not mothers. It's mama. They are literally out there on TikTok living their best lives.
So
they're doing skincare tutorials, everything.
I want to talk about this quickly because Lebang has been, I don't know if you're angry about this or if you're just a little bit disappointed, but your favorite artists keep changing genres and they're not telling you about it. And then suddenly you download their new album, talk about Apple Music. And then suddenly you realize like this person is no longer doing hip hop or R&B. Now they're doing like soul. And you're like, this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
Who are we talking about here first so we can just so we can understand?
So first and foremost, I am probably one of the biggest Drake fans on planet Earth. I've been a huge fan since like his mixtape days. For like the past 10, 12 years, he's just been my ride or die. I've just always dug his talent, his ability, his melodies, his flows, his everything. He's this artistic genius. I'm like, oh, Drake, I love you.
Mm.
And so here I am minding my own business like last week. And then I think it was on like the Thursday and he tweets something like, oh, by the way, tomorrow I'm dropping an album. So I lose my mind. I'm like, oh my God, yes, another album. It's going to be awesome. And then I wait for the album. And then when it comes out, I download it like 61 million other people on this planet only to hear that it's actually a dance album.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, cool. So I am expecting hip hop. If anything, maybe a little bit of pop because over the years he has evolved like most artists do. So now he's a bit of a pop artist, which I can accept. But now this dude has a full blown dance album. And by dance, I mean doof, doof, doof,
oh,
doof,
right.
doof for like 10 or 12 tracks and like he's singing over them.
And did you go through all the tracks and then you're like hoping for that one that reminds you of the old Drake, but there's just nothing and you feel like he's really wasted your time and lied to you?
Well, not wasted my time and lied to me. He's just kind of clearly introducing me to like this new version of him, which is fine. I mean, most of it is produced by Black Coffee, which is cool. Trezor. There's a lot of like South African, like, you know, energy in it, which is nice. It's just a warning would have been fair. I literally was, I think there's like one hip hop song right at the end, right at the end.
So you don't dislike it.
Everything else is dance, right?
It's just not what you were expecting. This is like you bite into what you think is a carrot cake and it ends up being milk tart.
So I can't relate to that because I've never experienced that particularly, but sure. something like that, Gareth. I'm not mad at him. I'm not saying, oh, how dare he? But it's just, it was a bit of a shocker for me where, you know, your favorite hip hop artist who's had hit after hit after hit is going to come through and do a whole dance album. I think on one end, it's great because, you know, he's trying new things. He's being experimental. He's maybe like living years ahead of the rest of us. But your market, artist, you know what your people want to hear.
And maybe he's just moving into a genre where he can sell more because Lindy Dooley says Beyonce just released a song a few hours ago. It's also dance. So maybe there's something going
on. That's what I'm on.
Are you serious?
Sanella says Drake should have just given the whole project to Black Coffee and instead of just three tunes. And Mongezi saying, Lebang, Drake should not confine himself to one style of music. He's not just a rapper. He's an all-round musician. So, but I don't think you're criticizing him. I don't think you're saying this is a shitty move. Maybe it's a very good one.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just surprised. Yeah, it was just a bit of a shock. And if Beyonce released a few hours ago and it's also dance, then I guess my point is being proven. This is the direction that these artists are going. Maybe the taste of music and people's palate for the kind of stuff is going in the Ibiza route. It can never be me. I will not be caught dead there. I've been to a lot of like deep house events and I know some deep house artists. It's just, there's a way, you know, there's a way that you do it. And I don't think a full-blown album where you're singing on it is the way. But
it also feels to me like Drake has been wanting to do this.
Yeah.
I think
artists get bored like we do. I think they look at their catalog and they go, well, I want to change it up a little bit. Anyway, look, while we're on this, some headlines. Who was the UK's most played artist of 2021? There'll be no guessing here because this is kind of obvious. If I say he has ginger hair, will that help?
Oh, I thought I was Adele.
Yes.
Ed Sheeran, the most played artist in the UK last year, according to new data from licensing body PPL. The star had the most played song of the year with Bad Habits. It is the fourth time in 5 years that he has been named the UK's most played artist. That's incredible. You know, and you think about this guy. He's like a ugly little dude with a this funny color hair and a guitar. And he remember, just won that court case where he was accused of stealing Shape of You from somebody. And he won that because the court said, no, he definitely didn't copy it. His continued success is, and I quote here from the PPL executive Peter Leatham, testament to the quality of his output and the strength of UK music at a time when the global music landscape is more competitive than ever. Do you believe that? I mean, do you think it's more competitive than ever?
I do, good for him.
I do think it is more competitive than ever, because nowadays everybody coming in strong with so many different genres. I mean, the UK is now also big on South African genres as well. There are UK artists actually experimenting with Amapiano, which is a South African genre too. So
this is a funny thing. When I was busy setting up my dad's Apple Music, and my sister and I...
Gareth.
Oh, you can't hear me? Hang on, can you hear me now?
I can definitely hear you, Gareth.
Okay. No, it's just you then, Mash. So while I was setting up my dad's Apple Music, I saw that they ask you, like, what kind of music does he like? You must come back in. So one of the settings is you have to choose, like, the genre of music that he might like. So I choose oldies, obviously. And then I'm looking at the rest, and one of them is Gom. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to choose Gom for my dad. Can you imagine that shit?
A man that has an Apple Shuffle Nano for 15 years.
I'm going to put Gom on. So I just laughed about that with my sister.
But you would surprise him one day. Just like throw them there as a bit of a span in the words and just see him like react.
So here's a story I want your opinion on. We'll just wait to get Mash back on. But the KZN Health MEC has warned sugar daddies to leave teenage girls alone. This comes from the Health MEC, all right? This is while we were celebrating Youth Day last week. A number of issues plaguing young people, including teenage pregnancy, sexually transmitted diseases, and HIV, were on the agenda. Speaking at a three-day youth conference in the Impapala area, which is in Kandla, on Saturday, the MEC Nomagugu Simelane, she urged young people to keep themselves healthy and ensure that the sacrifices made for freedom, such as the Soweto uprisings, were not in vain. And what does she go to? She said, from recent statistics, 1,300 girls were being infected with HIV every week in this country. That is frightening. While there's a reported 18,550 births by girls aged 10 to 17 in KwaZulu-Natal during the 2019-2020 financial year alone. Let's just look at that again. For 1 year, 2019 to 20, there were 18,550 teenage pregnancies. That's girls between 10 and 17, school-going age. That's frightening, right? Huh? What do we make of that?
So I spoke a little bit about this on my show, Gareth, when the stats were like fresh dropped. At the time, I think they released, like, the numbers were at 22,000 girls. And I was literally scared, because that means that this is a pandemic on its own, where young girls are literally falling pregnant left, right, and center. And the sad part is that when the media does bring it up and speak about it, it's always, what are these young girls doing? Mm. Where are these young girls going? At no point are they speaking about these men or the other parties that are involved in this. Because, I mean, these young girls aren't just waking up and deciding, you know what, let me just go find them. It's always either somebody in their home that's doing this to them, or someone in their family. They don't need to go far, by the way. They don't need to go far to get to encounter these situations. It's right underneath their noses, and nothing is being done about it, because, it's scary. It's shocking that this is now a norm. It's very much a norm. For us, we can sit on the show and be like, oh my God, really? Are these the numbers?
Yeah.
In the rural areas, this is a norm. In some townships, this is a norm, where the young girl on the side of the street from the corner house is pregnant. That's just what it is. And it's extremely, extremely sad.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to solve this problem. And then, you know, the MEC went on to talk about the issue with these sugar daddies, these guys in their 40s who are dating girls who are in their teens. And in some of these places, because these girls just have no money at all, these guys come along and they've got some money, they buy them airtime or whatever it is. I mean, we've joked about like how you can get sex for airtime in South Africa, but it's not actually funny. It's actually terrifying. And if you think about these young girls, like who are having to sleep with these older men, or maybe they, maybe in some cases they're doing it willingly. Who knows? But it's disgusting that these men are taking advantage of these girls, because anyone who's under the age of, in my opinion, like 19, 20, let alone 18, 17, when, you know, when there's a guy around taking advantage of that, he's the predator. He's the one who must own up. And we know who these people are because they're not going to operate in a vacuum. They don't go and date this girl in another world. They date her in this world. So they've got to be together around other people at some point. And that means other people are going to see them at some point. Other people are not going to go, hang on a second, that's not right. That old man being with that young girl doesn't seem right.
And also, I mean, in high school, I did witness quite a bit of this. I did witness girls actually dating these older guys.
Oh, yeah?
And back then, from my perspective, it seemed exciting. It was like, wow, she got the latest phone. She got the latest this, the latest shoes or whatever the fashion was at the time. But then the older you get, the more you realize that this is wrong, man. This is an uneven relationship. This is basically rape as well. It's very disturbing.
No, it is disturbing. And
at what cost?
And Corona's Boring says here, in Hungary, they made a newspaper article congratulating the man and made him mayor. That was in a story that we had on Friday on the show. And it's just as bad in a place like Hungary. But here in South Africa, the fact that the MEC for Health has to address this because it's so widespread. And as you said, Mash, there are these girls at school, even your stories from your own school, where you look at it and you're like, wow, she's got a new phone. And then you realize, oh, that's how she got it, right? That's not so great.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is not great. Especially when once you grow up and you realize that, first of all, this phone that she got then, today, it's nothing. It was the latest back then. It just shows you also how the material things are not worth it. Oh, they are not worth it.
But some people are so desperate, they'll do anything. I'm not excusing it. And Goldishek says they should all be arrested because they're actually technically pedophiles. And that's exactly right. It's spot on. And I'm not saying, Carlos says here, you're wrong, G, sex with a minor can never be consensual. No, I'm not disputing that at all. All I'm saying is that sometimes there is a bit of say-so, even from the young girl's parents. You know, there's some of these people look at it and they give a wink and a nod rather than condemning it outright. So there's something about society that we have to look at here too, because I understand what the law says, but there's something that is much more disturbing that's operating at a community level, where if the rich guy in the town, if the wealthiest guy in that village seems to think he can do this, no one is brave enough to stand up to him, which is much more scary, you know?
And you can imagine on like a smaller scale where it's just like family, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's even worse there. Like there, if like the family members find out or whatever, it's just kept under wraps. I just want to comment on what Tracy said. So Tracy, speaking of sugar daddies, watch Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey on Netflix. So it's a show and I've seen it. It is horrid. Literally, to prove that this thing isn't a new thing. It's been ongoing for like years. It's about the FLDS, Mormon-esque group, basically, where this leader had 65 wives.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea was that if you're a man, you can have as many wives as you want. And the wives got younger and younger and younger. I think towards the end, he got arrested for raping, I think, like a 12-year-old while some of his wives watched. But because this was religion, you know, we're okay with it. You know, it just sheds some light on what you're speaking of, the sickness, this disease that exists in society around ultimately not really protecting children, you know, and just kind of,
you know,
just going with the wind and it's horrid.
We've spoken about cults on the show before. And to me, the difference between a bona fide religion and a cult, it's a very gray area. Because we will say, oh, no, that's a religion if there are millions or billions of people over the world who believe in it. But if, you know, if it's a couple of hundred, we go, oh, it's a cult. But in the end, a lot of these cults and religions are based around the leader getting sex from young women. Have you noticed that? That's always 100%. Like one of the main goals of these cults is that the moment Let me just tell you something. If you're at a church or a weekly meeting or at a temple or whatever they call it, and you get together with a bunch of people and someone says, no, you've got to sleep with me. The leader of that organization says you've got to sleep with me to get to heaven or to win on earth or whatever else it might be, then you know you're in a cult. Get the hell out of there and stand up for yourself. It's not worth it, because I can promise you it's going to end in tears. Always does. Tiger says, the sad truth is that all these young women will never become independent and self-empowered. The cycle continues to perpetuate, and that's true too. That's very, very sad and very scary. Lindy Nduli says, my dad is a high school teacher, and a woman in her 40s came to beat a student up for dating her taxi driver husband. She came for the child and not her predator husband. That's scary.
See, that's another huge part of the problem that exists, where, again, the men are just absorbed of any responsibility. Like,
right.
Oh, you slept with a young woman? Okay, I'm going to go beat up the young woman. Instead of dealing with the fact that your man ain't shit. That is part of the problem of the cycle that just continues and continues. And
absolutely.
Yeah, we've just got a long way to go with these things.
And this is a problem we've had for years. I mean, do you guys remember the show Cheaters years ago?
Yeah.
Where women would be shown that your man is cheating. He's cheating on you with this woman. Mm-hmm. This poor woman has no clue who you are. She doesn't even know that you exist. And then you go and beat her up. She's in the same shoes as you. She's in the same boat as you. So it's a very sad situation.
I wonder, we must maybe discuss this one day with Dr. Hanan, because he might have a grip on this better than us. It's amazing the capacity of a woman who's in love with a man to forgive that man when he cheats on her. And all the anger and all the focus and all the hatred is on the other woman, not on the husband. Meanwhile, he's the one who initiated it. He's the one who's in a relationship. He's the one who should be saying no, but she's the bad person, and he gets away with everything, like Lebang says. It's a very weird thing that happens. Yeah, we got to move on. It's time for a little African analysis with JJ Cornish. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. We're looking at what is happening around the African continent. And we're going to talk to JJ this morning about a couple of the stories that are going around. Hey, JJ, how are you?
Bonjour, I'm exceedingly well, thanks.
Very good, nice to see you. And we did celebrate Africa Day the other day, which I thought was worthy of some note. And maybe we're the only show, I'm not sure, that there are that many shows that are participating in African news at least every week or 2 weeks. But I'm glad that we are playing our part. And I know that Kenya's election is a big discussion that we can have in a little while. But maybe you want to talk about the Congo first and Patrice Lumumba, because his remains have finally been returned to his family. And when we say his remains, not a lot was left, because we know how he died. Do you want to take us through that story, JJ? Because it's quite an epic tale.
Patrice Lumumba, he was the man that, we know what the DRC could have become. He was a symbol of that. Now, a year after being made a prime minister, elected prime minister, the first prime minister,
yes,
he was there was a coup, and he was taken and murdered, in fact, shot by separatists and mercenaries.
Right.
And, the CIA, they felt, the West felt that he'd become too pro-Soviet at the time. You know, it was the Cold War. And writing about it at the moment, so many things happened in the Cold War. For example, the West protecting apartheid South Africa during the Cold War. Shocking, horrible things. They don't like to be reminded about
Absolutely.
It, but it's a fact. Now, Patrice Lumumba, they thought he was pro-Soviet, so they shot him. And, Mobutu Seseko was one of those involved in his murder. Now, they dissolved his body in acid, but they kept his teeth as some sort of macabre, sort of memento of the man, and it's one tooth, one gold cap tooth that they have of his.
Jeez.
And we know that the king of Belgium, King Philippe, was in Congo last week, stopping short of a formal apology for what has happened, i.e., here I'm terribly sorry, and here's money to make up for it. We do have then the Prime Minister Alexandre de Coco of Belgium also saying that, they have moral responsibility for his killing. And here was a man who was killed for his words, his political convictions, and his ideals, all very wrong. So the His son has been given the tooth. He's taking it back to the Congo. They've declared 3 days of mourning, and it will be buried so they can get some kind of closure. But, it was an absolutely shocking business. And Patrice Lumumba's words, it's well worth Googling that one, because, I mean, he really was a remarkable, remarkable figure. And a bogeyman, of course, to the West, because he was such an independent thinker. But he was really a man today who would be considered, would be very mainstream in terms of African thinking. So it was an absolute disaster that he was killed. And really, the Congo has never recovered, from the stuff that happened back then, before its independence and afterwards.
Well, I'm surprised that King Philippe of Belgium wasn't more apologetic, because I think that his ancestor, Leopold, probably did more damage to the African continent than any other single person. And the kind of savagery that went on in the Congo, I mean, it's absolutely appalling when you hear the stories about people who had their hands cut off because they wouldn't work hard enough. And you had these terrible, terrible
picture
stories.
Picture of a father showing his five-year-old daughter with her hands having been chopped off because he didn't cut enough rubber. Leopold was one of the great mass murderers that history will have. He's an absolute, absolute monster.
And ran the place like his own private slave camp, the whole of the Congo. And there's a statue to him in Belgium to this day, and people forgive that. They say it's okay. We're worried about statues to people who came from an era where that kind of prejudice may have been more run-of-the-mill, more day-to-day. But here's Leopold of Belgium, who is, by all accounts, one of the most wicked people in history. And it seems that he gets a free pass by the people of Belgium. And fine, King Philippe's apologized, but kind of half-heartedly. I think that Belgium should be doing everything they can to set that right, because there's blood on their hands even to this day. Anyway, I do think we've got to move on, though. Human rights bodies, apparently no fewer than 24 of them, are urging the Commonwealth to hold Rwanda's feet to the fire at a summit in Kigali this week. Apparently, there are a whole lot of people in the Commonwealth who are very, very angry with Rwanda. But there's also this funny deal with Rwanda and Britain, where if you end up illegally immigrating to Britain, they will send you to Rwanda. What's going on here, JJ? It's very confusing.
It's very. The Rwanda, of course, was not a member of the British Empire at all.
No.
And it became a member of the Commonwealth back in 2009. It's the latest member to become latest country to become a member. And there were very real concerns about its human rights at the time. And they said, you've got to look at it. That hasn't improved. And when we talk about human rights, we're talking about harassment, threats, and of course, killing of opponents of Paul Kagame. Patrick Karegeya, his former intelligence chief, killed in 2013 in the Michelangelo Hotel. Kayamba Niawasa, his former military chief, they attempted to assassinate him outside his house in Johannesburg.
Yep.
So that sort of thing, it's cut ties between Rwanda and South Africa. They're furious about it. They expelled three diplomats. We expelled three diplomats. They expelled six of ours. The presidents have got together at an African Union, on the fringes of an African Union meeting, and they're trying to get together again, but it hasn't happened. And as we know, President Cyril Ramaphosa is not at the Commonwealth Summit in Kigali this week. I mean, he has other things to do. He's so spoken saying this is not a snub, but the other 53 members are all there. The heads of state are all there. But essentially, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and 22 others, including a Commonwealth human rights body, is saying if you don't hold his foot to the fire on this one, your credibility and your standards and your integrity will be at stake.
Huh.
And they give a list of things that have to happen. Stop taking in journalists who have been caught, who are critical of you. You need to reiterate the core values of human rights of the Commonwealth, and it certainly does have that. But are they going to speak against Paul Kagame? You know, he doesn't seem to think. I mean, he's a very, very arrogant man. Well, you know, I told you when I went to interview him, he sat on a, he sat like P.W. Huerta used to, on a stage. His desk was elevated above everybody else so that he looked down on you. And here he has got the Commonwealth. He thinks he's got the Commonwealth. I certainly hope that they're going to make a lot of noise about it publicly. As for his taking in the British, the unwanted migrants to Britain, because the ones they want, they'll take in. And in fact, they go and poach people, Britain does when it wants them. That has been stalled because of action, not by the British courts, but by the European Court of Human Rights. And Britain is still a member, or still subservient to that. And now there's people in Britain saying we should get out of that. But, of course, it's a very important body. So that's been stalled at the moment. But, you know, they did say if they're not on this plane, they'll be on the next. And there's a number of them. Eventually they were going to fly a plane to Kigali with three people on it from the original 31 that they, because of court.
So, I mean, this Paul,
so it's
Paul
a, it's
Kagame.
A best ball for Bojo.
Paul Kagame is such a controversial figure. I don't think it would be saying too much to say that maybe Rwanda is the most controversial country in Africa right now, because there are people who love him and say, well, he runs the country very well, and, you know, it's clean and tidy, and people abide by the law because they're terrified. And then there are people who criticize him quite rightly for his dictatorial tendencies and for the fact that the place is pretty much an autocratic state. What are your feelings about Rwanda? I mean, are there things that we can learn from them, or is it all just worth criticizing? I mean, what are the opinions of other African leaders, for example, when it comes to Rwanda?
Well, you know, that he doesn't have a huge following. And, of course, Paul Kagame is seen as the man who ended the genocide back in 1994. Mm. Well, there were others that did that, and most of them have been killed. Paul Kagame came up through the middle of that. So, I'm an inveterate critic of the man, and I see many, many Africans are too. And when I speak about this issue with Britain, the overwhelming sense is what an embarrassment for him, because at the end of the day, little Rwanda, the land of a thousand hills, is one of the poorest countries in the world, remains that despite his development plans. And you know, I have to say, you're not allowed to mention tribe in Rwanda. You can't talk about whether you're a Tutsi or a Hutu. Well, let's say on this program we're not allowed to mention race.
Yeah.
But I'll just give you a hint about who really likes Paul Kagame. It's people of the same color as you and I, not the same color as Mash and Lebang. Mm. So does that give you some indication?
Right. Okay.
You want somebody who keeps the streets neat, who prosecutes you if you drive a dirty motor car. Oh. Well, whose kind of standards are those?
The rule people.
It doesn't matter if he kills his opponents.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. It's like those people who say to you, well, the trains run on time in Nazi Germany. That was a good thing. Anyway, let's just look at one last thing. Kenyan farmers, and I mentioned the Kenyan elections, but they want to resume multi-million dollar daily exports of a narcotic, which is called cat. We've all heard about cat, to Somalia and Somaliland. And they stopped that during COVID. But is this a normal trade? Is this a trade that can be done under the eyes and the noses of the government?
4% of Ethiopia is the biggest producer. 4% of their exports are cut. Mira, they call it.
Cut.
In Somaliland, I wanted to interview a minister, very high minister, and they said, well, you can do it on Thursday, Friday, because on Wednesday, he chews.
What?
And, you know, they sit around and they chew the leaves.
Okay.
And then they use a lot of sugar because the leaves are very bitter, so they all get rotten teeth from it. It creates tens of thousands of jobs. you know, it costs $58 a kilogram, this cut. It's got a red stem. The women are into producing it. The men are into chewing it. And when you go and sit and chew it, It has this mildly narcotic effect. It suppresses the appetite. I wish I could get some at this wow. time for that purpose. And and then, you know, I mean, people are saying, no, well, it's a perfect social thing. You have to chew it to understand it. But it does keep the men away from their families. They get disinvolved and or uninvolved with their families and that sort of thing. So there's no doubt there are social evils involved in it. I found, you know, Somaliland, which is reliant on aid to a large extent, when you go into the town during the town after lunchtime, when the people start chewing cut, it counts to much more than the aid pouring into the country. Wow. You know, when I covered elections there, I observed the elections. I'd walk into a polling station, and it was like going to a rock festival in the 60s. You know, you'd say to the guy, how are things going? And he'd go, oh, wow, man. We ran out of ballot papers, you know. Oh, wow. I said, well, have you phoned the central office? You know, now I'm an observer. I've got to make sure that everything's going to be right. Have you phoned the central office? Have you ordered new papers? Oh, yeah, we're going to do that, man. Yeah, we can do that. So I said, but when did you run out of paper? Well, when did you run out of ballot papers? Oh, wow, about 4 hours ago, man. And that's because, they started chewing cut at about 10 o'clock. So it's quite amazing. What it does, I mean, it makes people very mellow, but.
I really thought this was cat, as in the stuff that's cocaine, but it's cut with other stuff. This is cut. K-H-A-T. So this is, why is this never?
Yeah, also called Mira.
Mira, why is it something that's
It was legal in South Africa until maybe a decade ago.
But why is it something that hasn't spread all over the rest of the world? And how come it never took off here?
Well, that's my generation's got to answer that, because we got, I don't know, maybe better stuff.
Maybe better stuff, huh?
I don't know. Ask those people whose phones and Apples you've got to work. They'll tell you. I think there was better stuff. Or people were too busy making. Yeah, you know, the fact is it's an appetite, as I say, it's this mild narcotic, it takes you out of things. It certainly was very popular wherever the Somalis or Kenyans went, so it was very popular all over Europe. It's been banned all over Europe now because of that. And I don't know, South Africa, because of, I don't know, the Calvinist ethic that worked at the time. You couldn't see Andries Dreyer chewing cut, could you?
No. I mean, parallel parking says it's also used.
Maybe it would have made him a much cooler guy.
It's also used by pirates in Somalia to stop seasickness, among other things. So interesting stuff. JJ, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for this morning, but thank you again for a really interesting look at what's going on just north of our border. And there's always plenty of useful information in there too. All the way from Patrice Lumumba to cut. We've learned a lot this morning. It's great to have you on. We will see you in a couple of days' time.
Looking forward to it.
Very good. That's JJ Cornish. And, of course, that is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. We had to try and squeeze as much in there as possible. We've got a whole lot more coming your way, including an expert called Dr. Gerard Labuschagne. He's a clinical psychologist, a criminologist, and an advocate. He's got an interest in forensic and investigative psychology. I think this is going to be a really interesting discussion. We've got to talk about criminal profiling. We've got to talk about parole hearings and how those don't work, because in South Africa, a lot of people who are eligible for parole are people who really should still be in jail, according to the expert. So we'll find out what he thinks of that. And also, what you can do about your own risk and threat assessment. How can you figure out which criminals can be rehabilitated and which ones you need to be careful of forever, because they can't be fixed? So a whole lot of questions. We're dealing with the Crime and Investigation Channel this week. That's us. We're talking to all these people who have stories in that department.
Look at us.
That's right. Lebang and Mash and I will be here to look after you in the next hour. Don't go anywhere. Cliffcentral.com. It's Tuesday morning, the shortest day of the year. Cliffcentral.com.